This is an excerpt from one of our upcoming books, not going to be published until summer 2024, but here's a sample nonetheless. It's from the conclusion, and our protagonist is considering or evaluating what's the best thing to do. He lives in Madrid, he's moved to Madrid. Should he stay or should he go? In the introduction, I said this story was not about ham legs behind bar counters, those typical things you've seen in guidebooks and on YouTube. Having reached this far, it is obvious that this is a book of essays, a series of reflections about Madrid, my Madrid. It's also about memory. When I was rifling through my brother's old TEFL book, I came across a manual on how to memorize things more effectively. Ironically, all I can remember from that is an exercise where you had to visualize 10 conductors holding ice cream cones rather than batons. Is that adaptable? Can Spanish verb tenses be assimilated if they are seen as delicious scoops of dessert? In a way, I have always worried about my memory, convinced that I didn't have a great one. In university, I tried to remember funny conversations and little jokes, the stuff of everyday life, the meaningful minutiae that tends to be forgotten. For this reason, I scribble notes after every chapter of a book I'm reading. I keep a diary sporadically where every podcast or documentary I consume is carefully logged. Self-improvement and not forgetting. Both intersect in the blue notebook with the little prince on the cover. The podcast is also a great avenue for this. I never have to remember an exhibition because it is saved forever in the magical world of MP4. A friend recently asked about a diary. Anything embarrassing in there? No, not at all. Nothing shameful in there, unless you count my eclectic consumption as embarrassing, which I do. Another regret of mine is that I have never specialized in one topic as a reader or a writer. Migrating from topic to topic, living inside it, reading it, then forgetting it after moving on to the next one. But that's a story for another conclusion, for another book. As we reminisced about working together in a charity shop, he said something surprising. He said, "I had a good memory." Taken aback a little, I did realize that we were talking, and as we spoke, things flooded back into my mind's eye. Dormant all along, not forgotten and not erased, the menagerie of old women, young Continentals, and the two Irish lads, us, found life again. This is the experience I've had writing this book. Convinced that it would all be a haze, putting pen to paper, okay, finger to keyboard, actually liberated all these things I thought I had forgotten. What a relief, they were still there, and now every smile and sigh over the last decade can be preserved. Carefully written down, creating space in my mind for new experiences in Madrid. Nobody is from Madrid. The 1950s saw immigrants arrive from other parts of Spain, and nowadays it's still an accessible destination, with its charm pulling in people from all parts of the world, from all walks of life. Even its foundation story features a guy climbing up the city walls with all the stealth and sure-footedness of a cat in order to open the city gates, breaking down an artificial division to let people in, trickling down through the centuries. A gato, in modern times, is someone who has both sets of grandparents, from Madrid. It would be impossible then to not talk about Turkish writer Orhun Pamuk, a fellow traveller and migrant who collected random objects because he was fascinated with their hidden meanings and personal memories, and he preserved some of them in a museum. Pamuk also grappled with the question of a passport. With this border-dissolving document, how connected are we to the country we are leaving? How much do we belong to the country we are entering? His family may have seen Jean-Paul Sartre on the street, that great French institution, but they still ate on borrowed plates with borrowed utensils, used by people before them, and presumably to be used by people after them. Immigrants sometimes bear witness, but they do not participate. Then, there is James Joyce, the man who left and never came back. Not physically, at least. While writing Ulysses, he sent his brother to check the fine details of Dublin's fair city, and he kept drawing from that green well of inspiration. His most accessible work is even called Dubliners, and its short stories examine the Irish capital from top to bottom. Through the pages of his novels, he went back to his country of birth again and again. He may have dined with Stravinsky and Picasso and clashed with Proust. He may have travelled across Europe, but both Ireland and Joyce belong to one another. Like friends with intense, complex feelings, with the innate energy that repels as well as attracts. Nobody steps into the same city twice. Developers are replacing Joycean Dublin with its historic storied buildings, with anonymous, anodyne hotels. The great writer will have to live on through annual Bloomsday celebrations and the imagination, through strange plates of food and literary masterpieces. An immigrant is always moving, showing their passport every time the landscape of a city changes, thumbing the stamped pages every time they change with it. One moniker for the city is El Foro, the forum. It's a center, and people are pulled towards it. The Romans never really had much interest in Madrid. If anything, it was a waypoint on the journey to other parts of the Iberian Peninsula. Though some writers have tried to oversell the Roman influence on Madrid, perhaps jealous of the classical luster that has been afforded to London and Rome, or for their own complex and ultimately flawed reasons, because it undermined any evidence of the Islamic influence over the entire country. A culture war erupted along this fault line, with conservatives celebrating the Reconquista, when King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella reclaimed territory from the Moors to help create what is now modern Spain, and liberal historians advocating for the relegation of the term to the dustbin of history. After all, why should we see an immigrant culture as an aberration when it was just one chapter in the never-ending story of the country? Which begs the question, where do I belong? Many immigrants are running from something. Bad debts, an unwelcoming family, the daily ritual of not fitting in. A middle-aged English guy once told me, as I was preparing to interview him for a blog, that all English speakers in Madrid were misfits, that the Spanish capital was a refuge where they could awkwardly rub shoulders, approximating to a sense of friendship and place more than they ever could back home. Even Irish and British people could get along better on neutral ground. As he said all of this, his Spanish housemate passed through the living room, and when she found out I was from Ireland, she spoke about being in Belfast and about the injustice endured by Irish people under British rule. While she was there, she probably settled in. Was it easier for them than it was for us? The most I was ever running from was bad public transport. It may seem irrelevant, but Madrid's superior public transport system leads to a better quality of life. Fortunately, my relationship with my homeland is a good one. I never left under a cloud of conservatism, and going home always felt exactly like that, being in a cherished and peaceful place. Being there makes sense in a way that Madrid never will, which is fine. Ultimately, I am not Spanish, and this is normal. As much as I love being in the Spanish capital, my DNA is encoded with something else. It's rooted in Irish soil. But I don't want to leave. Even if I did, Madrid has a way of pulling people back. Here, famous last words are, "I'm leaving, moving on." They usually end up being a lie as withdrawal symptoms kick in. Try as people might, it's hard finding a place that equals this rough and tumble patchwork of a city. On each corner, gruffness and friendliness, culture and earthy humor coexist. This is best exemplified by a city slogan, "From Madrid to the sky." Some use it as a variation on the Spain is different idea, that the next best thing is heaven. Others say it comes from a time when Madrid was more of a sewer-ridden backwater than a thriving urban center, and the only good thing was the distant, untouched sky. The phrase was first used in Dances of Winter and Summer by Luis Quiñones de Benavente, a writer from the Spanish Golden Age, and more than anything, it captures the extremes of life, not just Madrid. Life happens no matter where you are, so why not let it happen while living in one of Europe's most interesting capitals? I took a decision in 2012 to move here. It'll only be a few months, I thought, but it soon turned into more as the years kept rolling by. Unconsciously, we take decisions that put us on a certain track, and while I could move again, I feel more like leaning into Spain rather than pulling away. It's more convenient than pulling up roots again, and my career and my writing is here. For all sorts of reasons, Madrid is my life now.